This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 252, for the big weekend of December 18th through December 20th. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Box Office, The Box Office Awakens. So, Art, how's it going?
It is going fantastic. That's all.
Great to hear.
I mean, I couldn't be any better. Couldn't be any happier.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm a little nervous about this one, because this is a historic point in cinema right now. So with that kind of buildup, let's get over to what happened in the box office last week. So this is for the weekend of December 18th through December 20th. Here's your top five. At number one, Star Wars : The Force Awakens brought in $248 million.
Yeah.
At number two, we have Alvin and the Chipmunks: The Road Trip brought in $14.3 million. At number three, we have Sisters at $13.9 million. At number four, we have The Hunger Games: Mockingjay - Part 2 at $5.9 million. And at number five, we have Creed, the movie, not the band, at $5.0 million. And there's your top five. So, yeah, so I would say Disney had a pretty good weekend.
Yeah.
But Art, I think you have some numbers to throw at us to tell us exactly how good a weekend they had.
I have a few numbers to throw at you. I think it's interesting. I was looking at the total gross so far, and Hunger Games is just over $254 million in 5 weeks. Creed, though this is its opening wide weekend with $5 million, still has $87 million total gross. It opened 4 weeks ago, so that's not bad. Mm-hmm. On a $35 million budget.
Right.
But really the big news, Star Wars The Force Awakens is crushing box office records left and right. It's topped the largest box office weekend of all time. It got $57 million in Thursday night previews. It got another $281 million internationally for a massive $528.9 million worldwide. It did not beat Jurassic World for its worldwide opening. But the reason it didn't was it didn't open in China yet. Jurassic World also opened in China, and it got another $100 million off of that in its opening weekend. Largest Thursday preview, $57 million, we already stated. The previous record was Harry Potter with $43 million. Largest Friday opening day single day, $119 million. Previous record, $91 million by Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. Largest Sunday record, $60.5 million. Previous record, $57.2 million, Jurassic World. We're going to be hearing a lot of the same movies over and over again. The previous domestic opening was Jurassic with $208 million. Worldwide opening, highest per theater average, $59,982. Top opening weekend for a PG-13 rated film. Top holiday opening weekend, the previous record was The Hunger Games at $158 million. Biggest December weekend, December single day, widest December opening, 4,134 theaters. December opening weekend, fastest to 100 million, 1 day. Previous record, 2 days for Jurassic Park. Global IMAX opening record, 48 million. Domestic IMAX opening record, 30 million. So there's just a few of the numbers and records, and it is just crazy, insane. Oh, and it also, that we just updated the fastest to 300 million, 5 days.
Yeah, so as Art said, if you look at this laundry list of records that it broke, you see a lot of Jurassic World as far as previous record holders. You see a handful of The Hobbit and Unexpected Journey. There's one Hunger Games catching fire. But the most peculiar one is it also had the largest Monday at 40.1 million that surpassed the previous record holder, Spider-Man 2, by $13 million or $13.5 million. Spider-Man 2?
Wow. Well.
And then the largest Tuesday was is also belongs to The Force Awakens at $37.3 million, $2.3 million over $35 million that was held by The Amazing Spider-Man.
Interesting.
I had no idea. Yeah, yeah, that's just, you know, curious.
That is very interesting.
Yeah.
People like to go see Spider-Man during the week.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to
say. You know, he's a working class hero.
Yeah, yeah, you could say that. Yeah. You can say that too. So obviously now the only thing really look forward to is not if but when it'll pass Avatar.
Yeah.
And when it'll pass Titanic.
how fast it'll go to a billion.
Yeah, there was one asterisk at the end, as far as the largest Thursday previews that the Harry Potter fans will say, but there was only midnight showings for Harry Potter.
Yeah.
They had 7 p.m. showing on Thursday night for Star Wars, and they also included the marathon, so you watched all 7 movies.
Right, right.
And that was $60 a piece.
Hey, whatever. People are buying.
Right. Yeah, so if we ever, you know, I was talking about this with a friend of mine. There's nothing even close to Star Wars. I mean, is there another property that can even think about doing what they did?
I don't know.
I mean, because it kind of has to be an existing property. You're not going to get something like this, you know.
And it's an existing long-term property.
Right.
You know, I can't think of anything. I mean, there have been some really big ones, but nothing like this. I mean, Mad Max made a huge comeback. Right. Star Trek has been steadily growing, but people are, they're on, you know, two sides of the fence with that one.
Yeah, but they're not these numbers, though.
No, they're not. They've been doing good numbers, but not these numbers. I don't think anybody can, no. I really don't see anything.
All right, so here's some more numbers, and this is more on the Star Wars side as opposed to box office record, kind of numerology, if you want to think of it that way, or statistics. From TheForce.net, they have a little Star Wars box office infographic, and they basically chart out how each movie is done historically. And I'm just going to run this down real quick. So, like, Episode 4, A New Hope, domestic opening weekend, $1.5 million. Through its entire run, $460.9 million. 94% Rotten Tomatoes, and IMDb had 8.7. Empire Strikes Back, that ballooned up to $4.9 million and actually made 290, so like 170 less than A New Hope. That was also 94% Rotten Tomatoes, an IMDb rating of 8.8. Then we get to Return of the Jedi, 23 million. So now we're into double digits as far as millions. Mm-hmm. But domestic box office, 309.1. Rotten Tomatoes dipped down to 79%. And IMDb rating, 8.4. So thank you, Ewoks. Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, 64 million. Or 64.8 million. Total domestic box office, 475 million. Rotten Tomatoes, 56%,
mm-hmm.
and an IMDb rating of 6.5. Then we have Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, 80 million opening weekend, 302 million total, 65% Rotten Tomatoes, and IMDb of 6.7. And the last one before the current one, Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, $108.4 million opening weekend, total domestic, $380.2. Rotten Tomatoes, 79%, and IMDb, 7.7. And then we're sitting right now at 247 for the opening weekend, 95% in Rotten Tomatoes, IMDb, 8.8. So their average Rotten Tomatoes is about 80%, which is interesting because, you know, 3 of the movies were above that number and 4 of the movies were below that number.
Right, right. So, no, one was really close.
Yeah, really close. Really
the
close.
Best, and the I best of the prequels.
I didn't know they had tomatoes back in 1977. But anyways, yeah. Okay, so I think we will conclude talking about the box office. So let's look forward to what's coming out in the box office, or I'm sorry, at the theaters this weekend. So, Art, why don't you tell us about the first of four movies?
Okay. Well, we are going to start off with Joy. Joy is the wild story of a family across four generations centered on the girl who becomes the woman who founds a business dynasty and becomes a matriarch in her own right. Betrayal, treachery, the loss of innocence, and the scars of love pave the road in this intense emotional and human comedy about becoming a true boss of family and enterprise facing a world of unforgiving commerce. Allies become adversaries and adversaries become allies, both inside and outside the family, as Joy's inner life and fierce imagination carry her through the storm she faces. Jennifer Lawrence stars with Robert De Niro, Bradley Cooper, Edgar Ramirez, Isabella Rossellini, Diane Ladd, and Virginia Madsen. Like David O. Russell's previous film, Joy defies genre to tell a story of family, loyalty, and love. Rated PG-13 for brief, strong language. The genre, though it says it defines genre, it's drama. Directed by David O. Russell, written by Annie Momolo and David O. Russell. Runtime, 2 hours. We already mentioned most of the big names.
Basically everyone from Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah, pretty much. Susan Lucci.
I recognize some names. Melissa Rivers. Ken Howard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Drina De Niro. I guess that's about it. But yeah, so it's like a actor's follow-up to Silver Linings Playbook, which has me interested because I really did enjoy that movie.
Yeah, a lot of people will be watching this movie after it gets, you know, Oscar nominations.
Right, right.
He has a track record of getting, you know, actor nominations.
So yeah, I'm interested. I wonder, is it like supposed to be an amalgamation of some of the women of industry, or is anybody in particular? They don't say anything in the description, but I wonder if it's like loosely based, and so they're not going to point it out. I have to look into that.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, obviously, well, it's 60%. You know, it's right at that, you know, precipice of being between fresh and rotten.
Yeah. But like Silver Linings Playbook came out of nowhere. No one was expecting that.
Yeah.
So we'll see. What have we got next?
All right. Next, we're going to talk about a really terrible looking reboot. All right. So let's talk about Point Break. No tomato meter score yet. They just need a couple more bad reviews and then they'll put a number up, because they've had 3 rotten and 0 fresh.
No.
Out of 8,312 Rotten Tomatoes users, 91% want to see it. So here's the description. An undercover cop makes his way into a scene of bank robbing extreme sports athletes in this remake of Catherine Bigelow's Point Break. How you know you're in trouble? When you have to mention the director of the previous one. Erickson Core directs from a script by Equilibrium's Kurt Wimmer. Rating is PG-13 for violence, thematic material involving perilous activity, some sexuality, language, and drug material. Genres action and adventure, directed by Erickson Core, written by Kurt Wimmer, 1 hour and 53 minutes. And the cast lists a bunch of people that probably do most of their own stunts. Luke Bracey, Edgar Ramirez, Teresa Palmer. She probably doesn't do her own stunts. Delroy Lindo, Ray Winstone, and I had a shot at recognizing some of those names, but now I'm just...
I got nothing.
I recognize Steve Aoki, but he's a cameo because I think he's like a musician or a DJ or something like that. So yeah, I really don't have to really say any more.
No, this looks bad.
All right, so I'm just going to read one review, and this is from Maggie Lee from Variety. So she's a top critic. What weighs the characters down is not their parachutes or rock climbing gear, but their sententious, well, I learned a word, first world guilt and bland casting. Gone is the free-spirited fun of Catherine Bigelow's cult hit original. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Or I don't know if I'm even not going to change the channel if it's on regular television.
I might watch if it was on regular television. Mm-hmm. No, I'd want to at least see it on some type of cable, because I wouldn't want, you know, all the stuff edited out that it's, you know.
Right.
created violence, you know, language.
I can probably commit to the 3-minute honest trailers that they'll do for this one. That's about it.
Okay, that's something.
Yeah. All right, Art, why don't you talk about the next one?
Okay, next up we have Daddy's Home. It is 26% on the tomato meter. 96% want to see it. An affable radio executive finds himself competing for the affections of his stepchildren following the unexpected reappearance of his wife's ex-husband in this Paramount Pictures comedy. Rated PG-13 for thematic elements, crude and suggestive content, and for language. It is a comedy. It is directed by Sean Anders, written by Ethan Cohen, Adam McKay, Chris Henchy, Brian Burns, and Sean Anders. Runtime, 1 hour and 36 minutes. It's Will Ferrell, Mark Wahlberg, Linda Cardellini, Thomas Hayden Church, and Paul Scheer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see anybody else that I recognize. I
recognize some comedians.
Okay.
Like Hannibal Buress, pretty popular comedian nowadays. But yeah, doesn't mean you want to go see the movie. Just means you want to see a stand-up.
Right. Yeah, I'm not really interested.
From Alan Salkin from New York Daily News, the world needs great Will Ferrell comedies. Unfortunately, this isn't one of them. a positive review from Randall King from the Winnipeg Free Press. While it never really transcends its TV night premise, it does deliver its share of decent laughs.
He's from Canada. What does he know?
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll get someone a little closer. Here's Marjorie Baumgarten from Austin Chronicle. Daddy's Home is one of those comedies that's not terribly good, but not nearly as terrible as it might have been.
Okay. Yeah,
that's oh my gosh. All right.
Yeah, you're sick. You know, it's not fatal, but you're still sick.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on because nobody's going out of their way to see this.
All right. The final movie is a movie called Concussion. It is currently 61% on the tomato meter. Out of 66 reviews, 40 fresh and 26 rotten. 95% of the 11,527 Rotten Tomatoes users want to see it. So here's the description. Based on the true story of a doctor who discovered CTE, which is chronic traumatic encephalopathy, I guess, close enough, in football players, that's why I didn't go to med school, and the uphill battle he faced in bringing the information to the public. So this is PG-13 for thematic material, including some disturbing images and language. This is a drama. It was written and directed by Peter Landesman. Our cast, Will Smith, Alec Baldwin, Albert Brooks, Paul Reiser, David Morse, Luke Wilson, Mike O'Malley. Oh, my God. I had a shot at pronouncing this guy's name. Okay, Adewale Akinyue Ejbaze. He'll always be Mr. Echo for me. He's also in G.I. Joe. So now I know he's who I'm talking about. So yeah, this is basically about a doctor trying to get football to acknowledge that the concussion is a lot more serious than anyone wants to admit.
Right.
And I did see an interview with Will Smith because a lot of people were wondering why he chose to do this movie, because he is a huge NFL fan. And it almost kind of makes the point that because of this risk, you know, maybe we shouldn't be, you know, encouraging, you know, humans taking part in this, you know, in this pastime kind of thing.
Hmm.
Just because it seems like at every level, concussions are starting to happen more and more often. I have a friend of the family, their son had to quit his senior year of football because he started getting concussions.
Right.
And I know Will Smith in the interview really was talking about his son, Jaden. he played 4 years of football, and his biggest worry was him breaking his leg and breaking his leg so bad, and that it would affect him later in life.
Right,
kind of
right.
thing. He just didn't want him to get hurt. And now, after doing the research and researching his role for this movie, he felt like the worst father in the world because he had no idea that this was happening. I mean, not only, you know, because I don't know anybody that has had problems during Pop Warner, but I'm sure that there probably have been some kids. It's not, and there's kind of a PR battle going right now with concussions. And, you know, the NFL right now, you know, I think 2 years ago they instituted new rules that if you're diagnosed with a concussion, you're not let back on the field.
Right, right.
There was one instance this year where you can tell the guy had a concussion. You have to be a doctor, but they let him back out there, and you can tell that he wasn't even close to the proficiency he was before he got that hit.
Right.
Kind of thing. So this is kind of a, you know, you could almost say a political movie kind of thing. I don't know.
I understand. I mean, health concerns and being fully aware of what the risks are, but I like with kids and whatnot, and even people at the college level, at a professional level, you know, this is, yes, we need to be aware of what the risks are, but these people are making a lot of money. There are people in this world who put their lives on the line for a lot less money than these people are getting paid. I mean, what is the current league minimum? Do you have any idea?
Probably about $150,000.
Right. And so, these people are putting out their lives on the line, but they're putting their lives on the line for a lot of money, you know? And so understanding the risks involved and definitely the NFL needs to acknowledge this is a real risk, liability, whatever. But these people are also adults, you know. Yeah, you need to understand what you're doing.
Right.
But it's interesting. It really is. And it is serious.
Yeah, I mean, it almost is a peripheral conversation to the whole steroid argument. Just because, you know, the side effects of steroids, you know, can lead to dangerous, you know, complications kind of thing. And it's kind of like, you know, no one's telling them they have to get on the football field. So, you know, why, you know, if you're going to get hurt from a concussion as opposed to steroids, you know, I don't want to start a big debate here, but
And those two kind of go hand in hand though, because as the steroid use increases, the people getting injured on the field by getting hit by these people who are using steroids also increases.
Right. I mean, you know, there are other, you know, dangerous professions.
Yeah.
You know, any time, you know, anyone from public safety, whether it be a policeman or a fireman, mm-hmm. You know, it could be, it, you know, they might not live through that call that they get.
Right.
And in addition to obviously, you know, every branch of the armed forces. So,
yeah.
Anyways.
No, I mean, on a side note, my brother-in-law, he's a Dallas police officer, and he went from, you know, doing the night shift, he moved into a detective role when he had a child because there's a lot less, you know, risk involved in that side of things, you know, right. From being on the beat to being on a desk, you know, and he's a Marine. So I don't think it was a choice he ever saw himself making until, you know, he had a daughter and realized, well, that's a whole different bag of apples.
Right.
But yeah, so it is interesting. And I used to like Will Smith a lot more than I do now. We'll see.
Yeah. I think that he has gotten to a point in his career where he's starting to make, not necessarily commercial choices, but, you know, choices that obviously he feels are the best for him. But I just, you know, I haven't really been drawn to a Will Smith movie in a long time.
No, I mean, what was the one? The sci-fi futuristic.
After Earth.
After Earth.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was a commercial choice, and that was not a good choice. You know, Whereas something like 7 Pounds got a lot of awards, but I disagreed with it on so many like moralistic and worldview type points of view. So I don't know. It has me interested. I do like sports movies, but I don't know how much it's going to center on the sports and how much it's going to center on the medical side of things.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this might be kind of a subgenre of sports movies that it's not a feel-good right. story, you know, and the underdog right. doesn't win at the end.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So, yeah.
Well, when, how, what time frame are we talking about here? Because this is something that's still kind of being, that's still in the forefront.
That I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I know.
I don't know how contemporary the movie is. So if it was a story that was just a couple years ago, it's I would probably guess about 3 to 5 years ago.
Okay, then yeah.
But I've never heard of this doctor.
Okay. I mean, I know there's a lot of concerns about it. As someone who doesn't really follow sports, I know right. this is an actual concern that a lot of people have, players have, parents have. I've heard enough about it tangentially.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's move on.
All right, so that concludes a meandering talk about the four movies that are coming out in the box office this weekend. So now we're kind of gonna follow what we did last week, because we have an impossible task of talking about Star Wars Episode 7: The Force Awakens without spoiling it. So we are gonna defer share time until after the news. So just like last week, if you do not want to hear any spoilers about Star Wars, you know what? You probably want to turn off now.
Some of the
news stories might have spoilers in them.
True.
So I'm just going to say right now that I would turn it off right this second. And if you're not going to go see Star Wars right now, make some plans to go see Star Wars. And, you know, give us a week or I don't know what I'm talking about. Just listen to this again. Just fast forward, and then you can listen to the spoiler stuff after you watch the movie. All right. So we're gonna go over the news. So Art, what do you have to lay on us?
Okay. You kind of threw me. I thought we were gonna do a little bit of share time, but that's fine.
Okay. All right.
No,
so
that's okay.
All right. Art wants to do a little bit of share time, so we're gonna do trailer share time. So Art, why don't you tell us what trailers you've seen?
Okay, so last week we talked about a number of trailers that I had not seen yet. So I went and I watched all of those trailers, and then I watched all of the trailers that led up to Star Wars The Force Awakens. So I think I have like 8 or 9 trailers I saw over the past week, and I am really excited.
Wow, okay.
So I went and saw Kubo and the Two Strings, and that is amazing. I am so excited for that movie. The visuals look incredible. I like I said, the production house that's doing it, I love two of the movies that they've done. The other one I'm just kind of lukewarm on, but still, I mean, the theme and the setting and it's just a little different from everything else they've done because of the, you know, Asian aesthetic, and it looks fantastic. Kubo and the Two Strings, I am very, very excited about. That is something I will watch in the theaters, and I will turn around and buy immediately, sight unseen. I'm committing to this because it looks fantastic.
Hmm.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. All I have to say is Bebop and Rocksteady, and I am in. It like you said before, it looks like more of the same. I really enjoyed the new Turtles movie, and so, yeah, I think that looks good as well. We'll see how it turns out, but I liked it. X-Men Apocalypse, I was kind of meh on. That really didn't do anything for me. I was just kind of, okay, whatever. I think I've kind of had enough of the X-Men for now. I don't know. I don't know if they need to integrate with the cinematic universe. I don't know if they need to get some different writers, but the trailer did not grab me. Things I saw leading up to Star Trek. Not Star Trek, Star Wars. And the first one up was Star Trek Beyond. Star Trek Beyond looks good. I did not have a problem with the motorcycle. It looks action-packed, and it looks very interesting. They had the Zootopia, another Zootopia trailer. It was, they're calling it the Sloth trailer, and it is hilarious. Kung Fu Panda 3 also looks good. I'm a big fan of the first two, so the 3 is a no-brainer. The full Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them was very good. This next coming year is just going to be really, really good. I can't say I'm excited enough. Independence Day, what was the tag on that?
I don't know.
Retribution, something with an R, and I got nothing. It just looked meh. It could be interesting, could be just a bad sequel. I'm not really sure about that. The Fifth Wave looks interesting. It's a sci-fi invasion with a little bit of horror elements. Maybe even borderline. No, it's definitely like a horror thriller because of the point of view from which it's told. It's similar to the War of the Worlds, the last War of the Worlds movie. It has a similar vibe to that. And then Civil War, which I'd already seen before, but saw again. I was very happy to see some more. Well, it's the same trailer, and I'm still excited about Civil War. So those are all the trailers that I watched.
All right, so let's end this trailer share time, and now we can get over the news. Do you want to go first, or you want me to go first?
Sure, you can go first.
All right, well, I have a whole heap of Star Wars news. So I'm going to start with this one. Did you know the Vatican has a newspaper?
I did not. I did see this headline. Give me more.
All right, so apparently the Vatican, not necessarily the official word from the Vatican, but the Vatican newspaper, that I guess has been reviewing films for quite a while. Let me go back. You might not be aware that the Vatican has a daily newspaper that it reviews films. La Osservatore Romano, I know I butchered that, but that's okay, has been publishing since 1861, but Pope Benedict wanted them to dive into popular culture, so they've been reviewing movies since 2007. And so they hated The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised. Give me more.
They complain that Kylo Ren doesn't match the evil of Darth Vader. They're not big fans of Supreme Leader Snoke. What was that? So they basically didn't think that there was enough evil things going on in this one.
Oh, interesting. That is not where I thought that was going.
Yeah.
They were going to decry it for, you know, being Star Wars and a lot of it being just derived from Eastern mysticism and
right.
You know, they just generally didn't like the film. Okay.
Yeah.
I can respect that. I disagree with it, but I can respect that.
Their quote about Snoke is that he's the clumsiest and tackiest result you can obtain from computer graphics. And as for not being evil enough, it seems like, or no, this is the article writer. As for not being evil enough, it seems like the whole First Order thing does some pretty evil stuff. I mean, there was that whole speech where everyone heiled. So yeah, Vatican, maybe
they blew
maybe
up
not,
like five planets.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
No. Yeah, no. Hey, you said not to do spoiler. Yeah, okay.
No. So you said we weren't doing spoilers in news. I just said I want to do some share time first. That's all I said.
All right, go ahead.
All right.
What do you got?
I'm gonna go up. I'm gonna follow up with the not Star Wars. Okay, so. The Hulk's role in Thor 3. So they're talking about a major change, and they're talking about how the Hulk acted at the end of The Last Avengers, after the fight was done, kind of sequestering himself, not, you know, succumbing to continuing to fight, continuing to rage out, but, you know, being a little more calm and getting out of there and leaving everyone behind. And that was a conscious choice that the Hulk made, not Banner, but the Hulk. And so saying that when, you know, we've seen an intelligent Hulk in comics before. And so more of the personalities might be merging and bringing more of that to the forefront in the coming Thor 3 movie. So I thought that was interesting. I was thinking when they said a drastic change, I was thought maybe we might see some Red Hulk or I don't know what. But yeah, a more intelligent Hulk, I'd be okay with that. We can see him start to develop that character and move into a different arc. How's that for not Star Wars?
Well, I'm realizing now that what I have for news isn't really that exciting. Actually, you know what? No, I got one small thing, and then I want to end news so we can get to talking about the movie.
Okay.
We already talked about how much money they made, and you know how much the movie made during the weekend, and how it's you know going to make a ton of money. But The Economist had this article about you know Disney's corporate strategy and how they're basically going around and buying parts of our childhood and just, you know, remaking the movies and, you know, treating them respectfully. And, you know, Walt Disney's original corporate strategy was to make a lot of movies and then build a lot of ways to cash in on that. So kind of like, you know, the next year they're going to start construction on a Star Wars land at Disneyland.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Okay, I don't know that I agree with that.
Okay.
I mean, at least from the perspective of, and I don't claim to know, I be any type of a Disney historian, but Saving Mr. Banks, if half of that is can be believed to be true, he was very much about preserving the heart and soul of what a thing was intrinsically about, at least in the scope mm-hmm. of that movie,
mm-hmm.
you know. Him wanting to get was it Mary Poppins? Mary Poppins
mm-hmm.
from the owner. You know, he even talked about how somebody had approached him and how he couldn't let what he had go. And it was a good thing that he didn't. You know, whatever. But he wanted her to know that he was going to treat her property with respect. That you know, that was his goal, to bring what she had to a wider audience. And I think they want to make money. There is no doubt. They want to buy properties that are lucrative and they want to use them. But they also want to treat them right, because if you lose that fan base, then what you have in the end is nothing.
Right.
You know, they own Marvel now, but for the most part, they've been very hands off. They're handling a lot of marketing, a lot of background stuff. But as far as what's coming out in the movies, they're not dictating to those people what to do. They're saying, no, go make us lots of money. Do what your fans love and run with it, you know. They now own Lucas, you know, and they're Disney is not micromanaging that. They're go make us money, go make it popular, you know. We'll manage the marketing and the merchandising and all that, and we'll make lots and lots of money. But as for the actual property, I feel like they are handling them well. Will it always be that case? Will they always knock it out of the park? Will they always, you know, have the right people in the right place? I don't know. You know, yes, they want to make money. They're making lots and lots and lots of money. I am happily throwing my money at them.
I was just going to say, let me throw some numbers out, because I really can't disagree with what, you know, you were saying about Saving Mr. Banks and kind of thing. But so back in 2006, they kind of started this ball rolling because they spent $7.4 billion on Pixar.
Mm-hmm.
Then they spent $4 billion on Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And then they spent $4.1 billion on Lucasfilm.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money.
They are, but they're playing the long game.
No, I understand that. And let's look at their revenues as of year-end October 3rd. So 23.3% was from the television networks. 16.1% were from parks and resorts. 7.4% were from film.
Okay.
Consumer products, 4.5%, and then interactive was 1.2%. So last year, their total revenue was $52.5 billion, and their operating profit was $14.7 billion. And I didn't really want to get into it because I'm kind of out of my depth, but apparently their stock went down this week.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just did the general Disney stock.
Right, General Disney stock.
Yeah, so
okay.
Maybe I'll report back on that next week or something.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it is after this weekend.
All right. And I'm just, there's one, I'm kind of jumping the gun a little bit, but I have an article called The Force Awakens, Answering All the Unanswered Questions from the New Star Wars. Okay, and do not take this seriously because this is published by Funny or Die.
Okay.
So here are some answers to some of the burning questions. So number one, how come Chewie isn't just a big fluff of gray and white hair? The answer is, since before episode 4, Chewbacca has always colored his hair at a popular Kashyyyk salon called Wook at That Hair. To cover up two particularly embarrassing bald spots, Chewie also had hair plugs implanted on each of his ass cheeks. How did Kylo Ren obtain Darth Vader's helmet? The nearest Lids location. What were we meant to ascertain from Rey's visions? Not much. It was basically a bunch of powerful images alongside a quick shot of her drinking a Diet Sprite. A Diet Sprite? I don't think that happened. It did happen. At one point, she looked at the camera and said something like, "This BB-8 unit is extremely important to the Resistance, and after a long day of running in the sand, I need a cool, refreshing Sprite Zero. Glug, glug." The last part was her drinking. Obi-Wan was there, too. He was? What was he drinking? He had a 2-liter of Fanta. I think I'm going to end there. All right, Art, okay. What do you got left?
All right, well, I closed a bunch of tabs. I'm just going to add that Star Wars The Force Awakens missed a deadline for the Broadcast Film Critics Association because they did not give those people early screeners, and they made the decision to add Star Wars The Force Awakens to the Best Picture category for their upcoming Critics' Choice Award anyway. So I thought that was very smart of them to not be what's the term I'm looking for? Considered unimportant, considered not watching what's really going on in the world. I don't know. It's the biggest movie of the year. How do you ignore it? Right. You know, it's huge, and we can just move on from there.
All right. So here we're going to end the news, and we're going to get to hopefully a big whop in share time. So again, if you're still listening, but you still avoided some spoilers we got through news, we're basically going to talk about probably every minute detail from the movie. So if you're into it, keep listening. Otherwise, we'll catch you next week. All right, Art, what'd you think?
I loved it. I fanboyed and gushed all over it. I enjoyed it from beginning to end, and I don't care what the naysayers say. Screw them. I loved it.
Yeah, I'm almost all the way there with you. I thought it was really, really good, but I didn't think it was a perfect movie.
Oh no, it wasn't a perfect movie. Mm-hmm. Not by any means. I didn't say that. Did I say that? I didn't say it was a perfect movie. All right. No. I by no means believe it was a perfect movie. No, there were plenty of flaws, but I want to experience that universe. You know, right. I said it before. Mm-hmm. I said it last week. That's why I play the games. That's why I role play. That's why I just really enjoy that universe. And so it wasn't a high bar for me. But I really did enjoy it. I didn't have a problem. Some people had a problem with the story beats just being, you know, right along, pretty much in lockstep with the first movie. I don't care. It was still, you know, I love the characters. I love the visuals. Everything was stepped up a notch, but it was basically the same things. You know, I just, the choices they made, the directions they took. I loved all of it. I really did. Sure, it had its problems. I felt like they were minor. I felt like this was a good jumping off point that is going to lead us to so many good places that I just can't wait to go.
Yeah, I'm going to jump around a little bit, but for me, the most heartbreaking moment in the movie was not the death scene.
Okay.
For me, it was when Chewie got wounded. And I don't think I was alone, because when I went to the advanced screening, and so it was with comic book fans, all people that are regular patrons to a comic book store or to my comic book store. After every trailer, there was applause. There was some applause for Independence Day. There was almost a standing ovation for Civil War. And I found out that the comic book owner, I don't think, is a huge fan of Deadpool. And, you know, I thought there was going to be a riot when he said he doesn't know if he's going to be doing an advanced screening for Deadpool. But anyways.
Oh,
but yeah, no, some of the story did bother me, but I don't think it stopped my overall enjoyment of the movie. Because I kept in the back of my head that I know that the original screenwriter left.
Right.
And I wasn't able to find corroboration of this, but I know that at one point Abrams went to Disney and said, I'd like more time to work on the story. And he said, no, you need to get it out by our deadline.
Right, kind of thing. Right.
And, you know, there might have been some direction that, you know, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. Because, you know, we want the appeal to be to everybody. And I don't know. I almost think that Abrams had the same approach that he did for Star Trek Into Darkness. It just worked better for this story than it did for Into Darkness. That's just my opinion. I'm not trying to goad you into talking about how much you like Into Darkness yet again. But
everybody knows it's not a secret.
No, I know.
That's not what we're talking about.
No, I know.
I don't have any problems with Abrams as a director, and I didn't have any problems with this movie. Like, not major. You know, you could have minor quibbles. There is a lot of stuff that was underdeveloped. You know, there is an article. It was article, blog post by Stephen J. Donahue. And he had a very well thought out, you know, reasons why he didn't like the movie. And one of them was things that just weren't elaborated on, just wanting to know more about the First Order. What is the Resistance? What, you know, why is the Republic even referenced when it's such a ineffectual, not on screen entity, you know? And it's like, these are things that are, you know, I feel like these are just little tidbits we're getting, and we're going to get more as the story develops. You know, I read somewhere, and I have no idea if this is true, but somebody out there said there is an hour longer director's cut. You know, that he had a 3-hour and 20-minute movie that, you know, is like, this is it. You know, and like, no, we've got to pare that down way more. That's way too long. So maybe some of those answers are in there. Maybe there are always things that were just meant to be answered in the next movie. Who knows? Because, I mean, this is just the beginning. We know we're getting 3 movies. It's not like, you know, the original A New Hope, where it was just the 1 movie. You know, then it was really successful, yes, and then we got more. You know, but that one story in and of itself told a complete and total story. But that's not the way we tell stories anymore. You know, these big franchises are set up to be a long kind of arc.
Right. Couple things here.
Sure.
First of all, as far as not there not being exposition on, you know, why we didn't get an origin story for the First Order or the Resistance, that was just another level that, because they wanted to match A New Hope, where you didn't really know anything.
Right.
I mean, we get dropped into the rebellion. What are they really rebelling against other than the Empire's evil?
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. So, I didn't have a problem with that. I didn't have a problem with that.
Right.
Going in, I kind of had a predisposition of being a little queasy because I didn't want to see Leia, Skywalker, and Solo in their advanced years. Kind of thing. But I do have to say I had a good time with Harrison Ford.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, I was left so high and dry with Luke, just because Luke is my favorite. I wanted to see, you know, maybe give him a line or two.
Nothing. You got nothing.
Nothing.
Hey, I'm gonna look at you. That's it. You get a look.
Yeah, and Leia, you know, she was all right. I don't think they gave her, you know, I don't think they gave her a whole lot to do. I was not surprised at the great job that Oscar Isaac, John Boyega, and Daisy Ridley did.
No, they were amazing. They were amazing the entire time.
And, you know, my dream or my wish was that if we're going to get a new Star Wars movie, let's do all new characters.
Yeah.
I would have, you know, I would have been happy with the three of them, 2 hours of the three of them.
You needed to pass the torch. I loved everything. I mean, just all the interactions between them. I mean, the first shot of the Millennium Falcon when the settlement is being blown up on Jakku and mm-hmm. making the run for the one ship, and he's like, "What about that ship?" He's like, "That's a piece of junk." He's like, "Let's take this ship." That ship blows up. And they turn to look at the ship she called a piece of junk, and it's the Millennium Falcon, and I lost it. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is so good. What is that ship doing there? What is going on? It was just, I thoroughly enjoyed all the callbacks and the handing off of the baton, you know. I agree. Leia was a little weak when she was kind of on her own. I feel like the scenes where she was interacting with Han about their relationship, about their son, you know, about what had happened and what needed to happen, I thought those were incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I read somewhere else that now we know why they eliminated all those books out of the canon, because they want to borrow from them, you know, like Starkiller Base.
Right, right.
You know, that kind of thing. Yeah, the end sequence, I don't think was as resonant. Maybe it's because it's the third time they got to blow up a Death Star type thing. I don't know. And I was a little disappointed because I own every soundtrack. I was disappointed with the soundtrack for this one because nothing really stood out. But I do need to go back and, you know, I got to see the movie a couple more times and I got to buy the soundtrack so I can really digest it, because there's a guy on Twitter, Soundtrack Geek, who gave it one of his top scores from all the soundtracks.
Okay.
So interesting. And that's all he really does. I mean, it's not just Star Wars. I mean, it's like every movie soundtrack he'll go through and, you know, like do a podcast about it, like, you know, Tony and Adam do with movies kind of thing.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. There was one sequence in the movie that I felt was out of place, and that was when they're on Han's freighter and the two monsters are running around the ship, and those two gangs. Was it three?
There were three. Three Wrathar.
Yeah.
Wrathar.
And cameos. I didn't realize there was going to be any cameos in this one, but I found out later that Daniel Craig was a stormtrooper.
Yeah. The stormtrooper who gets mind tricked.
Right. And
I thought that was hilarious.
And then I guess two of the guys in one of the gangs were the action stars from The Raid and The Raid 2.
Oh, okay.
And that was, speaking of the director's cut, that was one of the parts that was cut down, because I guess there was a battle scene between, or a longer battle scene.
Okay.
In that whole section of the movie. And another thing that was weird was the Supreme Leader Snoke. I don't know what was going on with, you know, old man Voldemort.
Okay.
And I'm just stealing that from another website. I didn't come up with that myself. Oh, and I listened to another podcast where they went out to Australia. So Comedy Film Nerds went out to Australia to see it a night early. And after the movie, they all went to a bar and recorded a 2-hour podcast. And one of the comedians said he was so glad that the Death Star and Hoth got together and had a baby. Talking nice. About Starkiller Base.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I think about it too much, I might have a problem with, but Rey was advancing with the Force very fast in this movie.
Okay. There was a very interesting, the Order 66 podcast.
Mm-hmm.
They did a full blown, just an entire episode talking about The Force Awakens, just spoilers beginning to end. But they, one of the guys on there had a very interesting, theory.
Okay.
Blah. Yeah. Okay. So you look at Rey, you look at how quickly she advanced at the, in the Force. And there's a few things here, a few little tidbits that you kind of tie together, okay? So when she has her Force vision, she was left on the planet, and she's waiting for somebody to come back for her.
Mm-hmm.
She has a vision. She has visions of different things. One of the things she has a vision of is what we think or what looks like to be the scene where Kylo Ren and the Knights of Ren destroy the whatever Jedi Order Luke was planning on raising up.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody speculates that she may have been one of the kids being trained, like one of the youngest kids.
Right.
So that she may have already received some training, and then she was put into hiding, and some mm-hmm. of that stuff was erased, or she was right. kind of like mind wiped to keep her safe.
Right.
So if she's already had training and then she starts experiencing some of this stuff, maybe that stuff is, you know, awakening the training she had already received.
Right.
Because, you know, in the pictures where they showed her as a young kid, you know, being left behind, she looks like she's 6, maybe 7. And in the prequels, we saw them training kids as young as 2, 3, 4.
Right.
So she could have already had a few years of training at that point and then had that, you know, locked away in her memory to keep her safe. And only now it's just all coming. It's coming to the forefront because of what she's got herself involved in. So that was very interesting. It'll be interesting to see where that goes. But it, you know, who knows? There was speculation that the guy I went with, he's totally convinced she's Skywalker's daughter, Luke's daughter. And I said, I don't know. He's like, well, why did the lightsaber call to her? You know, I'm like, oh, could be. It could be just, you know, it was something the Force was doing because she needed it.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that there is something there as part of the lineage.
Well, another question is, how the heck did they get that lightsaber?
I don't know.
Because the last time we saw it, it was flying down the bowels of Bespin.
Right, right.
So, you know, it's... I've seen multiple articles about, you know, 35 questions that we want to know the answer to. And so obviously Rey's backstory or her origin story is one of them, you know, including Finn's.
Right. There is a book. There is a book out there. We just went shopping at Walmart, and it is a novella with three stories in it, and mm-hmm. it's Rey, Poe, and Finn before the movie. And I had it in my hand, and I'm looking at it, I'm like,
Okay, so the book that Art is talking about is called Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Before the Awakening.
Before the Awakening, that was the title. Okay.
Yeah.
I was interested. I'm like, am I really going to have time to read this? Probably not. I'll have to see if they get it on Audible anytime soon, because I'll listen to it before I read it.
Yeah, I don't know if there's going to be a lot of reveals with Poe Dameron's.
No, backstory. I don't know if there's going to be any reveals, but it'd just be interesting to get a little more information on the characters. You know, a little.
I was disappointed that we didn't see any new ships for the most part, other than Kylo Ren's shuttle. And speaking of Kylo Ren, how do you feel about Kylo Ren?
As what? As an actor? As a character?
No, I'm talking about as a character, and basically probably the primary bad guy, or, you know, kind of like the point person bad guy.
Right. I liked him. I felt like he was menacing, and yet, you know, there was an air of craziness to him, an air of just out of control. For people in the role-playing set, somebody said, you know, Darth Vader is like lawful evil. You know, he's very, mm-hmm. very evil, but always in control. Kylo Ren is chaotic evil. He is absolutely evil and out of control and just crazy. Yeah. You know, the scene where he utterly destroys the council as the guy's giving him information about, you know, the droid getting away.
Mm-hmm.
Or the scene where Rey escapes and you know, he cuts up the restraining bench, and the two stormtroopers come around the corner,
mm-hmm.
and they see sparks flying, and they just turn and go back the other way. There were so many good scenes like that that are just they're very powerful and yet so funny when you think about them in context.
Interesting that he is able to at a base level read minds, where Vader was never able to do that.
Right, and every power set is different, you know.
Right.
He is not the, you know, he has and a lot of...
Being able to stop a blaster bolt in midair.
Yeah.
And keep that, it there.
Right.
For the balance of the scene. Keep it there.
Right, yeah.
Was pretty awesome.
And it's not going to move until I leave. When I leave, right. Then it'll move, you know. Yeah. No, that was great, you know.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, as a lightsaber duelist, very, very weak, you know.
Well, I think that's another tribute to the original movies, because we're gonna see both of them probably are gonna have another, or I mean they're probably gonna have a handful of battles, and there'll probably be a final one in episode 9.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, so you know, obviously there is a lot of strength with the Force with Kylo Ren. But not a lot of lightsaber training, and I think that's right. What they were going for.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And then you can kind of see both sides of a coin with Finn, you know, being athletic and trained in combat, but he had, you know, he has very little Force abilities so far,
if any.
Yeah, I mean, and then you get the opposite side of that with Rey, who has all kinds of Force, and she has some training because of, you know. Because of her ability with the staff in the or the bow in the bow staff in the when they were on Jakku.
Right.
Let me see, what else haven't we talked about yet? I enjoyed seeing some of the old some of the old characters from the original trilogy when they were talking about blowing up Starkiller Base, like Ackbar.
Yes.
And there was a couple shots of the Sulistan Nien Nub. Or Neen Nub.
Right. Who,
but I got to say, when I saw a couple people from Lost, it kind of took me... It ruined my immersion, man.
Oh, see, I did not... The one guy with the beard... who is that guy? He was also in... Abrams just likes that guy, because he was also an Alias. But the first thing I remember him from,
You're talking about Greg Grunberg?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
The first thing I thought of when I saw him was Felicity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he was the roommate in Felicity.
Yeah. I think he's been in everything.
Yeah. No. So anyway.
But one of the admirals was in Lost. Now that was the main one I recognized, because Grunberg was in one episode of Lost.
I gotcha.
And I had one conversation with my sister-in-law, saying that did they capture Kylo Ren at the end of the movie, because and I think she kind of mistook the looks between Leia and Chewie after Han's demise, you know, because it was her son kind of thing. And he said, I just took it that since that plane that we're fighting that split apart, that the First Order had to pick up Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically a meta reason, but you know, he's going to be back. He's not.
Right. Right.
If they don't I told her, if they don't show his death, he's probably not dead.
Right. And how would they have gotten to him? Because they had to walk in, and he was on the other side of that chasm that basically, when the planet was falling apart. I mean, he just got up and walked the other way, which obviously was back towards the base where people were probably evacuating.
But I think I said this before, but it came true. The breakout star of the movie for me was BB-8.
Yeah, BB-8. Oh, you know what? Chewie as well had just so many good reactions to things that were said and done. And, you know, when Rey and Finn meet Han Solo for the first time, and it's like, Han Solo, the general, Han Solo, the smuggler. He's like, wasn't he a hero of the rebellion? And Chewbacca's like, with a little shrug. He's like,
No, but, his little, you know, his little lighter thumbs up thing. That BB-8 did.
Yes, that was a good one.
And I think the most adorable thing, because it really didn't hit me until they put him next to R2-D2, and you see how much smaller BB-8 is. And
right.
So he's basically a puppy droid.
You know? He was still bigger than I thought he was going to be.
Yeah.
Because everybody was calling him a soccer ball, soccer ball, soccer ball. And then you see him, you're like, that is not a soccer ball, sir. he was much smaller than R2. The interaction with when you're talking about, you know, how it really hurt you when Chewie got shot, and the nurse who was working on him back at the station. She's like, oh, yeah, no, yeah, it looks like it hurts so much. Oh, you're so brave. You know, she's just completely stroking his ego. He's like, yeah, yeah. He's just totally agreeing with her. And it's just like, yeah, that's just what he wanted.
Well, you know, as butthurt as I got when Chewie got shot, the main reason is to set up the bit between him and Finn.
Right.
When Finn was trying to patch him up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, no, yeah, it was good. It was very mm-hmm. good. It was good on so many levels. There were people who complained that, you know, that they saw everything coming a mile away and they saw, you know, this, that, and the other thing, and you know, that the death scene, the death of Han, didn't have any impact because they knew he was dying. They knew he was going to die when he walked out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's, yeah, you know, and it's like, you've got to look at that from Han's point of view. You know, he knew he was going to die when he walked out there. That was probably what was going to happen, and he did it anyway.
The interesting thing is when people see this movie after they've seen the original trilogy, and they say, well, you know, it's just like A New Hope, where I know that there's older moviegoers that saw the original Star Wars and thought, this is so much like Kurosawa's Hidden Fortress.
Right.
You know, so, yeah. That, I mean, that's... This isn't new,
no
kind of thing. So, yeah, I didn't have a problem with that.
I didn't have any problems with that. No, I mean it's you know it's the hero's journey and it's tropes that have been done over and over again and it's based on the pulps and that's all full of tropes and doing things you know to get a point across, to tell a story, to you know it's storytelling 101. Sure, yeah, that's fine with me.
Yeah, let me see. Is there anything else? Oh, I love the new TIE fighters with the turret, man.
Yeah.
That whole part when they're escaping the, I assume it's the Star Destroyer. Yeah, I thought that was awesome. And yeah. I still think there could have been more ship battles or ship to ship battles in it.
Yeah.
Even though
yeah.
The lake part where you just see the wake on the water,
come across the water.
That was really cool. And yeah, another thing while I was watching it, I was kind of that, you know, Finn wanted to basically split the party when at the just before Rey finds Luke's lightsaber.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. That really didn't make sense to me. And I know they were just trying to bring in the story thread where Han left before the Battle of Yavin in Star Trek 4, or Star Trek, Star Wars 4, Episode 4.
I have, you know...
Because Finn is supposed to be Han.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be the new Han. And, you know, I kind of understand, you know, why he was leaving. I just, that part just felt a little forced. And it didn't really matter because he was still there when the attack happened.
Right. He didn't, I understood it from, I guess from a couple of different points. A, you know, he knew, he intimately knows what the First Order is and doesn't feel like they stand a chance. Right. So... You know, I feel like the best option is get out of here, you know, but he's the type of person who, when it comes down to it and somebody's life is on the line, he's making the right decision. You know, when nobody's in danger, he wants to run. When somebody's in danger, he wants to run to them, right. You know, and going back to the hero's journey and Joseph Campbell, there is a part where the hero has to turn down the what is the term? I am blanking.
They have to resist the path that lays before them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's always that point in the journey where they make that choice that no, I don't want to go. Okay. Yes. I have to go. You know, Rey is doing the same thing. She's like, no, I have to get back to Jakku. I can't, I'm not here for this. I've done the part I need to do, but I need to go back, you know, right. And then she gets forced along the path. And that's a part of storytelling. You know, you have to have that push and that pull. So yeah, I don't know. I can't say enough good things about it, but it's a thing that ties back to my childhood and it took me right back there.
Well, I think as much as I liked the movie, it kind of did prove to me that you can never go back.
Oh, okay. I mean, disagree.
That's why I wanted new Star Wars.
Right.
I don't know, but if you look a little bigger at some of the other things that have been, you know, remade or rebooted, It's never going to be as good as this movie was. It will never be as good as the original three were for me.
Right. You know what? I see this as, I would put this, to me, most people, I've talked about this before, most people like Empire best. Mm-hmm. I like Star Wars best. I like the original A New Hope. That is my favorite. It is hands down my favorite. And this, you know, people ask me what's my favorite movie, and I hem and I haw because I don't want to, because I like so many different movies.
Daddy?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Aubrey?
When will you be done?
Probably just a few more minutes.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Yes.
I forgot to put away the chips.
I wasn't the one eating the chips. How did I forget to put the chips away?
I'm going to take that as a sign that we need to wrap it up.
No. Okay, wait.
The boss has spoken. Go ahead.
Yeah. I forgot to put away the chips that she was eating. Star Wars is my favorite. It's the one that started it all. I love Star Wars. I love it. I cannot say that enough. I am a fanboy through and through, and Star Wars is my favorite. And this movie, like I said, when people ask me what's my favorite movie, I say I'd rather tell you my favorite movie in a particular genre, because I love movies just on such a level. You know, I enjoy watching movies. I enjoy watching all different types of movies, from, you know, teeny bopper flicks to romantic comedies to everything in between, even sports. I don't watch sports, but I love sports movies. I love westerns. I love just, I'm all over the place with the type of movies I like. And so I'd rather say, what type of information are you trying to find out about me? And so that I can give them something to say, okay, if you want to talk about this type of movie I like, this is my favorite, or this type of movie, this is my favorite. I don't want to pick a favorite because they're like my children. Watching The Force Awakens has solidified in me a fact that, no, Star Wars is my favorite movie, and it really has, I don't want to say it reignited a fire, because it's not a fire that ever went out, but it has stoked the flames to a new high for me. The movie was not perfect, but it was everything I wanted it to be and more. It was everything I needed it to be,
mm-hmm.
and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I very rarely go back to see a movie again in the theaters. I will be going to see this again.
Inside Out.
Yes, I saw Inside Out three times. Three times I saw Inside Out. But that was not by choice. I didn't choose to see Inside Out three times. I saw Inside Out once, and then it was somebody's birthday, so we went again. And then it was at the Dollar Show, and we went with another family who hadn't seen it yet. So that's how I ended up seeing Inside Out three times. I would not have chosen to see Inside Out three times. This is a choice I am going to make. I am going to try and talk Mark, the guy I went with, into going to see it at the IMAX in Fort Worth in 2D at the Fort Worth Museum.
Oh, I'm so jealous about IMAX in 2D.
Yeah, so that is my next goal. I will let you know if that happens. I've got to see how long it's going to be running for, and if we can line up our schedules. But I like I said, I am not saying this was a perfect movie. I'm not saying it did not have flaws. I don't think the flaws are anywhere as numerous as the people who are disliking the movie claim to be. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I absolutely loved it, and it was good. I'm very happy.
Yeah, obviously to sum up, I didn't love it obviously as much as you did, but I definitely want to go see it again to see what I missed.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know.
Oh, another thing I wanted to mention. Okay, so I talked about the Order 66 podcast and them doing an entire show. They had a almost 45 minute segment where they did an interview with Sam Witwer. From Force Unleashed fame, and from what was the movie, the TV series with the vampire, the werewolf, and the ghost. I am totally blanking. Being Human. And also he did a ton of voices on both the Clone Wars, and I think he's done some voice work on Star Wars Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, He did a lot of voice work for the movie. They brought in a lot of people from the Clone Wars. There were a number of people who did voiceover work and even some actual on-screen work. So it's a very interesting interview. Definitely worth checking out. And also the entire episode, they just go front and back over the, just like what we just did. So just other points of view. One person very, very disappointed in the screenplay and what actually made it on the screen. But the other two thoroughly enjoyed it. So, so yeah, I think that about wraps it up for me.
Yeah, now we move to episode 8 with Rian Johnson. So hopefully Kylo Ren is not the kid from Looper. So anyways, so I think...
Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Another thing I wanted to talk about. Okay, so what else do you know about Supreme Chancellor Snoke? What do you...
Apparently he's been around a long time.
He looks like it. Somebody was speculating maybe Darth Plagueis.
I don't think that he was around before Palpatine.
Okay.
And he would have had to been around before Palpatine.
Right.
I
speculated because just another quick interjection.
Go ahead.
Because the brother-in-law knows that I had, you know, read some of the EU stuff, or now Legends, as it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And I speculated a possible Palpatine clone, because we had, I don't know if you've read any of the EU stuff, but Jarris Saboth was a Palpatine, you know, whatever.
So you're talking about from the Timothy Zahn Heir of the Empire.
One of those
trilogy,
I think it was that one where he came in, but anyway, so you know, they'll cherry pick and choose different ideas, and you know, maybe he's a clone of some Force user, maybe one we don't know, something, anything, who knows what we'll see. But
I think that I'm gonna dive headlong into the novels that they have planned. I've heard that Alan Dean Foster, who did the original Star Wars movie novelization, has completed the novelization for The Force Awakens.
Okay.
And that comes out January 5th. And I think that there's, you know, as usual with most of the books, there's more in the book that in what is in the movie.
Right.
And there might be parts that he thought were going to be in the movie, but got cut.
Okay.
Was there
another book, Aftermath?
Yes, I'm actually 3 chapters in.
Okay.
On that one.
I will be very happy to get a report on that at some point, because I've heard some good things about that book as well.
Well, you know, when you brought up the Before the Awakening, I was looking at in my wish list. I have like 3 books, and then I have the soundtrack here. But I see that one of those is the Life Debt, which is actually the second book in the Aftermath series.
Okay.
That comes out in July.
Gotcha.
So, you know, as far as novels, I know the novelization's coming out. We already talked about Aftermath. There's another one that's going to be a YA kind of romance story between a guy. I don't even know how the gender's right, but there's going to be a person from the Resistance and a person from the First Order that end up, you know, star-crossed lovers. So I don't know if I'm going to be reading that, but in case if anyone's interested, maybe I could mention that later.
Oh, I got 2 other minor things to mention.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I was at Target. And Target had a Star Wars Moleskine-branded Moleskine notebook.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love their notebooks. You know, the little black notebook with the folder in the back and the hand stitching and the little elastiband to hold it. And it's got the Ralph McQuarrie art in the front and the back.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, like $25. I found it in the clearance area for $12. So if you want to go over to your Target and look and see if you can find it. It's got R2-D2 on the cover, and it's a very nice little notebook. I saw it, and I was like, I had saw it months ago. I was like, I am not paying $25 for that. Clearance, totally a steal. So if you can go find a R2-D2 Star Wars Moleskine notebook for $12 at Target, it is a steal.
Yeah, no, I went, speaking of Star Wars, I went shopping last night. JCPenney had 50% off Star Wars t-shirts.
Oh, what?
Yeah, but they were kind of bare.
Oh,
so,
I bet they were at 50% off.
So next week, maybe, because I don't know if I'm on a secure line right now, since my daughter's bedroom's in the next room.
I gotcha.
So maybe I'll, but they are, I did make some purchases last night.
Okay.
And so some games and some t-shirts. There will be some
JCPenney has some good t-shirts. Yeah. I like their designs. Yeah. They got good stuff over there. I've picked up a number of t-shirts from there. My t-shirt collection is a little out of control. When we moved down here, we were reorganizing things. And so I unpacked a bunch of stuff and I kind of just dropped all my t-shirts on the floor. And so then as I would, well, in a nice, neat folded pile, but they were on the floor. We have a lot more closet space here. And so as I would wear the t-shirts, and then Brittany, when she washes the t-shirts, she then hangs them up. So I haven't been taking t-shirts off the hangers as much. So I've been mostly just going through all the t-shirts on the floor. I finally, just a few weeks ago, finally went through the end of the t-shirts on the floor. And so it took 4 months to go through all of my t-shirts.
Wow.
I have a bit of a problem.
I'm not judging.
Yeah, whatever. So I love my geeky t-shirts. And I have a feeling I'm going to get more because we did a Christmas, we did a grab bag for Christmas so that we're not buying gifts for every single person in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody was asked, what do I like? And the first thing I said was, geeky t-shirts, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, you know, I went to StarWars.com to look for t-shirts, and that just sends you to Disney. And Disney, it's been my experience, they don't do a great job on t-shirts. And I've ended up going to, you know, the litany of t-shirt websites. Like my favorite one's T-Fury.
Yeah, T-Fury is good. I like...
currently they have one where two Jawas are using BB-8 for a volleyball game. That's my favorite one so far.
Nice. Yeah. T-Fury, T-Turtle has some good ones. Mm-hmm. Shirt Woot has some really good stuff. And who else? Think Geek, but I think Think Geek is a little overpriced.
Yeah, and they're sometimes it's kind of hard to get the, you know, to get what you want in stock.
Ah,
you know.
Okay.
Cuz they end up being popular.
Right, right.
For whatever reason.
I love my Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. shirt.
Yeah.
Hail Hydra.
Yeah,
all right.
Same here. I have the same one.
Yeah, I love it.
All right, so I think it's time to wrap up this episode of Backseat Box Office. So everyone, thank you for sticking with us. And as we record this, tomorrow is going to be Christmas Eve. So I hope everyone is going to have or has had a great holiday.
Yes.
And other than that, take care of yourself, and we will catch you next time. Art, say goodbye.
Goodbye.